Today's talk is given by Dr. Jeff Smith, founder of Spectro Natura Limited, an Earth Observation Consultancy based in East Anglia. His talk is entitled, The Role of EO Consultants and SMEs Within GMES. Dr. Smith is an EO consultant with over 20 years' experience in academia, government and industry. He has worked extensively with UK government, delivering products and advice, as well as representing UK interests at the European level. He works within a UK government agency undertaking a range of activities from blue skies research to operational applications. He's been responsible for successful bids to the UK government, the European Commission and the European Environment Agency. Previously, he was the head of section for EO at the Centre for Ecology and Hydrology UK. His current focus is on land cover mapping activities with a user perspective and has provided technical input and management to UK National Land Cover Map and Corran Land Cover production projects. These topics being of interest to many staff and students here, we greatly look forward to today's talk. Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's nice to have an opportunity to come and talk here. I'm trying to think when the last time I was here to talk, probably 4 or 5 years ago. What I'm going to do, I'm not one of these kind of business development type people. What I'm going to do, I'm going to tell you, talk about GMES, Global Monitoring for Environmental Security Programme, and my kind of position as an SME from a real kind of user perspective. It's kind of tell you about what happens been for me, identify some of maybe the pitfalls and some of the opportunities really. I think as we get towards the end of the talk, you'll see there's a lot of opportunities for SMEs out there, and these opportunities are going to hopefully expand over the next couple of years. So now's a good time to be considering getting involved in that type of activity, EO-driven applications, and particularly in the GMES area. That's my thing gone. Okay. Just a little bit of, you've already had a big introduction to Spectro Natura, that's my consultancy. And the key thing really is that I kind of work in a position where I bridge a gap between the sort of technology development, so the sort of research, academia sort of area, the service providers, service provision, the actual big companies out there that do this thing on an operational basis, and the user requirements or user organisations. So I hope to try and fit in that gap and help to get everyone working together and talking together, etc. I've heard I've got quite a bit of experience at the European level, and so I am an SME working within the GMES community at the moment. So that's why all this stuff here is flagged up with the Commission, GMES, etc., and the framework programme, which is funding a lot of the activity at the moment. First of all, just to say what SMEs are. I mean, you may know already, but we deal in this acronym soup, and sometimes it's not properly explained. So it's these small to medium-sized enterprises. So this includes independent consultants like myself and small startups, university spin-out companies will fit into this category. And the definitions tend to vary. If you look at different websites or different funding schemes, they'll give a description of what SME is. But the EC definition is it's less than 250 members of staff and less than 50 million euros turnover. So I often dream of 50 million euros turnover, but not the 250 staff. But the that sort of category then describes lots of the players in the EO sector. So lots of SMEs are working on EO activities. And they're often different sizes, ranges of organisations, and some of them can also be niche-oriented, so they're developing applications for very specific areas, whether that might be sort of carbon trading or exploitation of SAR data. So they're often very specific, so they have very tight, refined skill sets. Just to continue, Spectro Natura is very small, that's just two of us, and we're really at the bottom end of SME, so I often get the joke applied to me that I'm the smallest of SMEs. So that's the kind of groups that I'm going to sort of talk about today. Now either you're in that position or if you're still in university, these are the sort of organisations that you may be moving out to as your sort of first job. So now on to GMES. I don't know how many people are familiar with it. I'll do a quick run through of what it's all about. I really love this little cartoon here. I don't know who did this. Somebody in the commission, I guess, had this drawn up. And GMES seems to be this fizzing bomb that's sat there in the landscape about to explode. But I think it's really just supposed to say that it's a kind of coordinating activity, it's a focus, etc. But GMES stands for this Global Monitoring for Environment and Security. And interestingly, when it was first named, it was actually going to be Global Monitoring for Environmental Security. So it was going to be very focused just on environmental activities. But the people in the civil security, not the military side, but the civil security, we see a fire engine there, putting a fire out, and lots of flooding going on. So they wanted to get a piece of the action as well, so they had to add the word "and" in. So that's how it ended up as environment and security. But I only work at the sort of environmental side of affairs and only in the land domain. But what this diagram shows is sort of that it's a kind of link up between various assets in terms of satellite imagery, people working on the ground taking measurements, and linking into sort of disasters, changes, pressures, etc. in the landscape. So that's what GMES is all about. And so the need for that, as I said, they're the pressures. There's lots of things, processes, changes going on in the landscape at the moment, which are having major impacts that we need to either monitor, adapt for, or put policies in place to try and mitigate. These are just the kind of headline type topics, biodiversity, big impacts. And when we think of these different topics, you can see they're often linked together. So an increase in settlement size, for instance, may create pressures on biodiversity or generate soil erosion, pressures on water resources, etc. So all these activities are kind of linked together. And what the European Commission has sort of developed, or not just the Commission, but internationally and nationally, are a set of directives and regulations where they're trying to both monitor these processes and also develop policies where they can actually try and reverse the trends. For instance, things like the Habitats and Birds Directives have targets in there for member states to maintain or actually improve the condition of their habitats and improve the number of species, etc. So there's a huge bank of legislation and directives, and this is one slide of a set of about four that I have in another presentation that kind of lists all these different policy areas and the actual regulations. So there's a huge amount of policy out there that requires evidence to drive it. So what's happening, these things are generated at the political level, but in order to understand whether they're effective and to monitor their implementation, we need information and evidence behind it. And that's what GMES is going to try and offer. So it's trying to set up a set of operational services. It's trying to set them up at a pan-European level so that they can deliver products consistently across Europe to address these policies. And it wants to do them in a kind of up-to-date, cross-border, harmonised sort of fashion. So what it wants to do is generate the information needed for policy support through Earth observation and other means, and do it in a kind of centralised fashion. And this is a little diagram I borrowed from somebody. But it gives the kind of major components of the system. And so GMES has sort of four main components. The top one is space observing systems. This is the sort of hardware. There's the satellites up there. There's a plan to launch a set of satellites called Sentinels, which I'll mention later. So we're doing, so there's also putting hardware up in space. There's collecting measurements on the ground, in situ measurements for calibration, validation, and some things that can't be measured from space. That's quite a minor part of the process, although it's actually quite key, and unfortunately it's been left to the end of the development cycle to be addressed, with lots more money going to develop the space hardware. There's data and integration of all this information. And finally, the one I'm going to talk about most today is these group of services here. And these are the services that are going to generate the evidence, the information to support the policies. And so in the original idea, we had this big demand here, this set of requirements coming from a whole range of organisations, if you read through there quickly, from the local to the European level, governments, non-governments, etc. We're going to send a set of needs to GMES, or a set of demands to GMES, and then the solutions are going to come back. Well, that was kind of a general idea at the beginning. It's not quite worked that way up until now, but it's kind of getting there. It's an iterative process, so we'll talk a bit about that later on. So just quickly go over two, three bits of that structure before I start talking about the services. So these Sentinel satellites, these have now been designed and are in the process of being built and plan to be launched from, I think, 2013 onwards. And what they form is a kind of nice suite of observing systems to cover the major types of observations are required. So Sentinel-1 is a C-band SAR, which is similar to the other systems that have been flown in the past. Centron 2 is what's called a superspectral. I think it's about a 10 to 15 band multispectral scanner with spatial resolutions in the same order as SPOT, Landsat, etc., IRS. Centron 3 is a marine system, so that's designed for monitoring sea surface temperatures and chlorophyll contents, etc. And then Sentinels 4 and 5 are for atmospheric. So you can see there, that group of satellites are going to provide a broad suite of information to support a broad suite of data to support a lot of information development. The integration is now being led by the EEA and links into things like the Inspire initiative. So there's, that's kind of covered there. And then this section down here, these are what the service developments. And these have all been developed at sort of various speeds. It's all been over sort of about the last decade. But in 2008, reached a point where they started to develop these fast-track services in land, marine, and emergency response. And I'm just going to talk today about the land services and how they've been developed and how they're now reaching an operational phase. But there are services in other areas as well, and there are likely to be some more developed. I think there'll be a climate change service and possibly a pollution one. Kind of how have they been developed? GMES has been around for a long time, but it's taken quite a while for it to kind of get to the level of awareness that we're at now. It was initially proposed back in 1988 and then was adopted in 2001 by the Commission. And then during the time since then, there's been a series of funding programs. The main one is under the EC Framework Program, which has a range of activities to develop research projects and research collaborations. And GMES has formed part of the 5th, 6th and 7th frameworks. In Framework 5, the projects had often actually just already started, and then they got badged as GMES in a kind of back-looking kind of view. But then Framework 6 has been the really key ones, and then Framework 7 is what we're working on now. These are the projects that are now starting to generate the operational services. But when we think back to the whole point of me talking today is about how SMEs can get involved in that. What you've got to think about, these framework programs are often very large, multi-partner projects across the whole of Europe. And they, especially for Framework 6 and 7, you have this idea of large collaborative projects. So 50 or 60 partners involved in developing a very broad, kind of very multi-purpose type set of applications within a focus, maybe just called land, for instance. And also they're part-funded. So if you're an SME and you're trying to get going, then you also need a set of other projects running alongside in order to provide the part funding for your involvement in the framework program. I mean, some universities do it because they already have research money that they can offset the part funding against, and larger organisations make sufficient profits, etc. So as an SME, I mean, it's where I have to spend a lot of time thinking about and organising the additional funding in order to support my activities. The second main development area for GMES was under these things called the GMES service elements that were actually funded by ESA. And they did this in a much more targeted, focused fashion. They provided full funding, which was great because then people weren't then worried about where's the rest of the funding going to come from. And they were very much more, because they were much more targeted, they then addressed more closely the user requirements. So what ESA were looking at was to set this sort of applications in place that would then support the development of the future space segment. So what they want to do is justify the next set of satellites that are going to be built. Now the final area of funding, and this is what's happening right now, is the first operational funding within GMES. And this is all going out to tender, and a set of consortia that have been selected to deliver this first phase of services. And I'll explain kind of what those services will be. But this is kind of what we call kind of real money. This is kind of fully funded, but given the current financial situation and certain issues within the European Commission, there's actually very tight funding on what the amount of money that's available to undertake these operations. So it's been quite a challenging time for organisations to actually bid for this and be successful. Okay, and so how, through those different funding models, how did we actually get to the point we're at now? And what we have is a set of projects. So there's GSEs, so the ESA-funded projects, these three at the bottom of the framework funded projects. And so over the last 10 years or so, these projects have run through, pushed the field on slightly further, and so we've developed a set of services that are then kind of viable and kind of doable and the sort of things that could be rolled out. There's been a lot of changing of goalposts between this. I've missed a point out here. I should have put about changing of requirements and needs. The Commission, European Environment Agency, various member states, there's been a lot of pressure and changes on what was actually required out of these services in the end. So, particularly in the land domain, the products that we originally were developing back in the GSC land era and geoland times actually changed dramatically now to what is coming out at the end of geoland too. There's also been a tension between the kind of member states and the European institutions. The European institutions want to set up centrally funded services that provide a kind of top-down view of the world. So you would imagine a consortium would produce a map that's defined at the sort of European level, and then that map or product or information source is then used by the member states. But as you can imagine, the member states don't really like that very much because they've often got their own data or their own information, and they much rather work in a decentralised bottom-up fashion where they provide information into a European monitoring system. So there's been a lot of tensions and issues during this sort of development process. So what I want to talk about now is what GLAND 2 has produced, and that what will then what are now becoming the first operational land services in the GMES initial operations. I do want to talk about that first. First of all, this idea of top-down, bottom-up was back between the GLAND time and before GLAND 2 started. We had lots of discussions about how this was all going to work. And I came up with this sort of hybrid top-down, bottom-up model, where I suggested that maybe there's a model where we can actually have the centralised services provide basic products, very low-level biophysical products, information about a surface that would be consistent across Europe, very simple things like leaf area index, amount of bare soil, etc., those sort of properties. They could then provide it from the top down into, so that would be the kind of GMES, European level activity there, into the member states or downstream services here. But then it could be used, and then these services could then use that information and pass it back up to GMES. So what we're trying to do is find a model where we could exploit the benefits of a centralised Earth observation data collection, so and then use sort of very standard models to pull out things like I said, like biophysical properties there, and try and get this process working in more of a cycle rather than in a top down only kind of mode. So I'm just going to put that slide in a bit out of place. And what we found was when we came around to the GLAND 2 side, that some of that thinking, some of those ideas, have actually been picked up in the development of the GLAND 2 project. And what they've decided on here, that they were going to have a set of core mapping services. So these mapping services were going to deliver very basic things, sort of low-level land cover, information on biophysical properties. And then they were going to supply this information to a set of core information services around the outside. So you can imagine the flow of information is out here, into this sort of area. And but one of the key things to remember here is this was all still being delivered at the European level. So what we had here was kind of centralised delivery of basic products, but then really a kind of centralised delivery of more advanced information products. So the SMEs couldn't really get into this model here unless they were going to deliver European level products. So it was the right model, but perhaps not at the right scale. So we're still thinking very much at a European level. But what these core mapping services in the middle do offer is a kind of a set of building blocks for SMEs to then build their own applications, their own downstream services upon. So what I'm going to do is just quickly go through some of those example services, just to see the types of products that would be produced, and so the sort of things that then spark off ideas of more local application developments or more regional developments in your minds. I'm not going to talk about the global area, but that's the kind of essential climate variable type operations. producing maps of leaf area index, GDP, etc. What I'm going to talk mostly about is this continental stuff here. So these are these basic information layers that are going to be passed from a core mapping surface down to a more downstream information service. And these fall under five headings. And I don't know if anyone here is familiar with the Perrine mapping, but these headings kind of match top level of Perrine to a certain degree. The first one is related to urban areas, and this is an imperviousness. This is the amount of surface that's taken up by soil sealing, so the development of urban buildings, roads, things that seal the surface where vegetation can't grow, etc. And that's really useful, things like land take, so as urban developments created. There's some information about forestry, then information about grasslands, particularly where grasslands are in Europe, although that might seem a very straightforward sort of question. The actual information that's used at the European level on where grasslands are is very weak and very variable between countries. Some information about wetlands is a critical area of development and conservation. And finally, a water layer, which is a very simple layer. Although, having said that, we all think we're very good at mapping water and land, but that can be challenging in some parts of the world. And I'll also quickly mention something else, which is called the Urban Atlas, which isn't really a core data service in the same way, but I'll just make reference to that. And these are all these data layers are all being driven by a suite of multispectral data from various satellite sources here, which hopefully in the future will get replaced by the Sentinels. So these are being produced at the moment, so because the Sentinels haven't been launched, they're having to use third-party data sets. And the idea is then to generate these biophysical parameters here, which are then used to produce the layers. And also there's the use, obviously, of a set of additional data sets where you need to do validation or DEMs, etc., for providing various corrections. So here's an example of the impervious layer. What we have here, the different colours here refer to how built up an area is. So the very pale oranges are low density. This is your kind of suburban type areas here. And then as you move up to the very dark brown there in the centre, that's a very dense urban where there's no vegetation at all ground is sealed. So if we just, this is a map from 2006. Look at a map from 2009. If you look at Schoenfeld Airport in the bottom here, if anyone knows it, there's been a major development there over time. And I think, you know, most people would say, well, that's a pretty obvious development. You kind of know that's happening there. But if you look at the kind of background to the area, you see individual buildings appearing and disappearing over time. And the sort of general infill of areas. And it's the sort of information that is. In the UK, we're very good at collecting it because the Ordnance Survey have a very good program of map update. But in other countries, this is not the case. So that's a really useful product. And one of the uses of it is going to be to do things like map updates for other data sets. So here's the Perrine map from 2000. And what they did was they looked at the changes between the Perrine 2000 and the 2006 image, which generated that ceiling layer, and they were able to identify automatically these small red objects, which are the expansion of the urban area. So what they've done is thresholded the ceiling layer, maybe at 80%, and then identified a set of objects, which then, in the update, so this would be Perrine 2006 here, in the update, these objects can then be simply merged onto the existing data set. So you're providing a layer of changes to support that activity. So that's a way where you would use this data set where you wouldn't actually see the data itself. It would just be hidden behind in a system that would help with the map update. Here's another example where, again, the ceiling layer for the whole of Europe now has been thresholded at 80%. And so it's giving you a consistent representation of the urban land take across the whole of Europe. So there are no artificial boundaries caused by different monitoring activities in different countries, different definitions, etc. So this is a very consistent image for the whole of Europe. Just to give a little couple of examples, this is from the forest layer. So what the forest layer will contain two components. One of them is this crown cover density. So what's happened here, the forest has been massed out, and then within the forest, the actual crown cover density has been identified. So there's a sort of scale of 0 to 100 there. But as you can see, there's a range of densities, patterns in the landscape, useful for identifying disease infestations or wind throw, or just keeping track of the monitoring of felling, or which could be legal or illegal logging in particular areas. To complement that, there's also a forest type indicator, which is just sort of a sliding scale between broadleaf, 100% broadleaf, 100% coniferous. And so you can imagine if you only had a mask of forestry, you could use this data set to then complement that to provide information on forest types or forest mixing, or what sort of impacts does a certain mixtures of broadleaf and coniferous have. So these are kind of information support layers that as a developer you would then add into your process. And you can imagine if these are provided at a European level regularly every 3 years, then you don't have to worry about collecting images yourself, calibrating them into coniferous and deciduous. This layer will actually then be provided relatively free of charge or through your client, etc., to actually to support your application. So these are kind of the supported information for what SMEs could get out of GMES. And here's an example of how a company, Joanian Research in Austria, has taken that forest layer, they thresholded the crown cover density, and then identified objects, the size of the forest patches, so it's like a kind of forest patch fragmentation type index, and then they've done this over, then it's expanded this over a large area. So this is the, I think that's Munich at the top, and I think that's Verona at the bottom. So these are large landscape areas where you can get consistent information. So you know, you may be an SME working just in northern Italy, you know, and you get access to the information and apply these same sort of models and approaches and indicators, etc., to support your work or support your clients, etc. Okay, so at the point we're at now, the sort of GMES initial operations, is called, is just starting. The tenders have just been awarded, and a set of consortium across Europe are going to be developing products. Up until now, I mean, you saw that 2006-2009 Berlin example I showed. The impervious layer is the only one that's been produced so far. So there's two already. There's two layers already, so there is something to kind of work with. But these other layers, the forestry, wetland, grassland and water, they're only being produced for the first time now. So 2012 will be the first iteration of those. And under this GIO funding, this work is going to continue on through this first iteration to about the 2013-2014 time. And in theory, in the longer term, we plan to, the Commission plans to have these things at a regular kind of update. So when you're thinking about developing a downstream application or working with a client, you'll be able to say that, yes, we know for the next 2 decades or whatever, these data sets will be available at regular intervals to support your application development. And the idea is that you want to keep the users highly involved, but unfortunately, looking back over what's happened over the last 10 years, the users and the key decision makers of the process have stayed at the European level, and unfortunately, there's not really been that much kind of local or regional input into the process. And I'll talk a bit more in a minute about how that's going to be addressed. But I think partly that is because the kind of SMEs haven't been able to get involved in the process, or enough SMEs from enough regions of Europe have been able to get involved. The other downside is the specifications that were developed during the GLN2 project, which was a purely R&D exercise, have not been transferred in their entirety into the actual operations. So some of the things that were offered by the GLN2 project won't actually be offered by the GIO project. I've kind of missed the line out the top, so the raw data was obviously will be available, but some of these biophysical properties won't be available. And for each of these different categories of layers, so the grassland was quite a rich and a lot of different information in the grassland layer, but that's only coming down to just one indicator now. So that's the difference between going from an R&D project to work on small areas to going to an operational project that's going to operate across the whole of Europe with restricted funding. So, in terms of thinking of an ideal world, I mean, these products will be freely available, and they will be consistent, manufacturing theory across the EU and between member states, and they will be updated regularly. So it's the sort of information to being delivered in a sustainable fashion that often the kind of the end user community for Earth observation applications has been requiring. I think too much in the past, people like myself, SMEs, have come and proposed ideas. We've said, we can use this satellite data here to generate this product for you. But then in the long term, is that sustainable? Does the satellite fall out of the sky? Does the data policies change, etc.? So you can often demonstrate something, but can you make it sustainable for the end users? I think that's what we're moving towards now. And it's always worth bearing in mind that these high-resolution layers, they won't provide all the answers, but they will be a very strong supporting role for you to then take forward and build applications on. And then there's just one final fly in the ointment at the moment, really, is that there's now a certain amount of uncertainty about whether the Sentinels will actually get launched at all. At the high political level, the European Commission has decided to take GMES out of its main budget. Which means that there's no guaranteed operational money to support it over the next sort of decade, at least in the next 7-year plan that starts in 2014. And that's caused a big ruckus. The member states obviously don't like this because there's been a lot of investment into this, and they want this thing to be operational and sustainable, as I've talked about previously. And before Christmas, David Williams, the UK... from the UK Space Agency, put a shot across the Commission's bows by saying we're not going to launch the satellite, ESA won't launch the satellites. And I read, if you guys get GeoConnections magazine, there's an article in at the front today, what's the guy's name, Dordain, the Director General of ESA, has again said that we're not going to launch the satellites unless the Commission puts GMES back into their main budget. So that's a kind of, we hope that's just a lot of brinkmanship and that these things will get launched. But for now, we must kind of just press on and assume that the satellites will get launched, the data will be available, and then we can develop the services. How am I doing for time, by the way? Yeah, good. Okay. So the question that really comes to my mind after all this, I'm kind of... That first bit there was more a kind of promo. I'm trying to sell you these GMES high resolution layers and stuff. And it all kind of sounds great in a sort of theoretical sort of way. But how can we really get that stuff out to pan-European users? So I can stand here and say about, you SMEs or you researchers, you can set these things up and go out and sell these downstream services to people. But how's it really going to happen? And how can EO consultants and SMEs really get involved? And I was looking through the GLAN 2 proposal the other day. I don't always do that, but I was looking for a certain bit of information. And I suddenly found this diagram. So that's the main GLAN 2 kind of structure. And hidden away on one of the pages was this diagram, which shows arrows coming out to downstream services. And I thought, well, that's really the kind of message that should have come out right at the end of the project. But all this activity here is core services, information services. What they should then be doing is driving these downstream services, and I was just quite amazed that was kind of hidden there in the documents and hadn't really been exploited. Because what we've got at the moment, this is the sort of current situation, is that the GMES data and information is kind of providing the fuel to the process. So it's the kind of information that would drive everything along. That's assuming that the satellites get launched, of course. And that we do have a set of services. We have these kind of vehicles that have been demonstrated, even if they're at the European level. They can be scaled down to the local level. If you're doing forest indicators, for instance, an SME could set up a downstream application to do those services at the local level. And we have a load of potential users. I mean, especially in economic situations, lots of users out there that want to try and exploit Earth observation, especially if a lot of this stuff's free here, that they've got a really good, there's a good value set up there where they can actually generate some information in a very cost-efficient fashion. But there's something missing from this kind of mix. And the missing thing really is the SMEs. And in this analogy, the SMEs are going to be the driver of the bus. Because what we've had up until now, we've had bus drivers that only seem to be able to go to Brussels or Copenhagen, where the European Environment Agency is. It's kind of people who have been driving it that have kind of had this focus on what's the European level requirement. So that's how we kind of an echo back down the chain of focusing the products at the European level, therefore people at lower levels are not interested, then you don't get the support, and it's a kind of spiral down. So what we need to do is get these drivers onto the bus that know where to go in terms of delivering local level products. And that is the SMEs. So we've got to say, we've got all the raw materials, but the SMEs have the necessary skills and experience, but also the local context. So particularly in Scotland, with the kind of devolution sort of issues, that you want to have these activities locally, you want to benefit from Europe, so you want the kind of European information support, but you want to apply them locally and get some real local value out of it. And my slides are not in the right order, so how do we get everyone on the bus? So there's the bus, it's now got people on, it's got a driver, and it's hopefully going towards operational services in a downstream fashion. But the key question is, how do we get everyone on the bus? The Holy Grail, or the Holy Graal, as it's called. This is another project launched under Framework 7, which I'm also part of. But the Graal, actually, after saying that the European Commission has not really been supporting downstream and local activity, I mean, this is the sort of project which is now starting to actually target them. And the idea here is that under this topic of fostering downstream services and links to regions. And this is where I'm going to kind of explain that this is where the SMEs can really come in and kind of make an impact. So as I said, or I've been saying all along, the local and regional actors, the local and regional authorities, they've always been seen as part of the process. If you read all the GMS documentation, all the position papers from the GMS Advisory Council, they always talk about this, but rarely do they get actually involved in a very active fashion. And they've also been wanting to promote the downstream services. That like a little diagram showed from the GLN2 project. It's always been there in the back of everyone's mind, the back of their thinking, but in practice it's not really come to pass. And interestingly, I don't know if anyone's seen the framework, still Framework 7, Space Call that's just coming out. There's actually a project in there for facilitating or stimulating downstream service development, which is great, but it's probably about 3 or 4 years too late, because really you wanted those things stimulated in the past so they're all in place to be developed now. And what we can see is, in terms of uptake, the local and regional authorities, when you consider how many of them there are across Europe, this is a massive potential market for people to get into. So as an SME, maybe in Scotland, you could develop something that could then be developed and then kind of promoted or sold or whatever in other countries. So you can work at the local region, and there's a huge market out there for you to tap into. And as I've said, this current economic situation favours this sort of thing. And I would hope, that EO SMEs are waiting to exploit GMEs. It's going to happen. Hopefully the sensors will go up when they stop playing political games. So these things will be up there, and hopefully the SMEs are waiting there to exploit it. But they might only be waiting there to exploit it if they're fully aware of it and they're already engaged in the process. So that's why it's disappointing that this new call is only coming out now for stimulating downstream service. So inside Graal, in this project, which is quite a small project, it's only run over 2 years, and it's just to kind of develop there's this communication link to get people talking together, to get SMEs on board, to get local authorities on board. So what we've been doing is going through these, a set of principles here. So what we want to do is the existing as well as potential stakeholders. So you find in a lot of the existing projects, it was the same users that were getting involved. What we want to do is expand that out to potential ones. And instead of thinking about their potential requirements, it's actually talking about what their real demands are. Often Earth observation people will say, or will suggest products to people. What we really need to do is go to people and get the users and get them to suggest what they require from the system. And all this stuff needs to be built on a kind of firm foundation for making GMES sustainable. So we're not just deciding about developing a workforce here. There's an academic component, an academic support component within Graal, where people can develop in summer schools, etc., to try and build up a group of people in academia and outside who can then exploit GMES and continue the R&D. And also we want these regional authorities not to just be an end user, kind of like at the end of the process, but they need to be a steering force as well to make sure that they're getting involved in the process. And also the space family, the set of space companies. In Europe there's some really big players and they seem to control a lot of what's going on. Some certain countries have really big influences on certain bits of GMES. And this company has become a bit insular, so what we want to do is bring in more players and therefore more innovation, more development in the process. These are someone else's slides, so they don't quite all fit together with me, what I'm saying. But the thing is, what we've been doing is look at the local regional authority needs, and then we've tried to develop a kind of taxonomy just to describe those. And what we've got here are these different kind of categories. If you look across it, this is kind of how you'd imagine the local authority might be set up into different departments and what the needs are there. But if you quickly whiz through these, you can very quickly find areas where GMES products could provide information to support what's going on. Now we'll find an example. Protected area management, for instance. So if you're in charge of protected area management in the local authority, you might want to know where land is being taken for urban development near your protected site. So if you've got a map of protected sites, you take that impervious layer, how it's changing over time, and suddenly you can find out that one of your protected sites is under threat or is at an increased risk there, for instance. So various ones, your water quality, you might want to use the water layer information, which will tell you where your small water bodies are, whether they're drying up over time, etc. So there's different... You can find lots of applications here that could use or benefit from the GMES data sets. What we want to do now, we're at this sort of point here, we've done those two stages. And we're developing this sort of single entry point web portal called GMES for Regions, and we're also developing a set of communications material. And the first port of call, just because this is the easiest, is I said we shouldn't drive to Brussels, I'm going to... contradicting myself here. But in Brussels there are lots of networks of regions. So there's something called NERIS and Brussels-based networks, but they're networks of regions, so local councils have become members of these groups. So we can quickly then disseminate out to a large set of local authorities through that sort of process. But then the next step is then to go directly to those individual local regional authorities, and also to approach SMEs. So we're producing a catalogue of known SMEs within countries that we can then use as part of this access portal. And then to get that properly live and get that to working. And the guy who did this slide is really into this sort of social networking and speed dating type thing. So he wants local authority weddings at the end. But what he really means there is the local authorities and the SMEs working very tightly together. Making sure that the products that get, the downstream services that get developed, are really in line with what the local authorities need. Okay, and so that's the area that the SMEs are really going to benefit from. So these are the areas where you can put your information into the web portal and find out if there's anyone out there who's got a demand similar to the offer that you're making in terms of the service. I've kind of probably said this already. So this GMES for Regions thing. And over the last couple of years, the European Commission has done this thing where they fund two parallel projects under the same call. So we've got a sort of complementary project, which is slightly different to us, called DorisNet. And this is downstream observatory organised by regions active in space network. So slightly more of a mouthful than that. But they're basing around their activity around what they're calling regional contact offices. So in a region such as, in the UK, perhaps England would be a region, or Scotland would be a region. And they set up an office where the local authorities in that region could contact them, and then they would hook them up to GMES for Regions. So slightly different model of how it's going to work, but we're both using the same single entry portal called GMES for Regions. And GRAAL has sort of dominated the sort of development of that portal. So what we're going to have is these... multimedia presentations on benefits of GMES, kind of promotional stuff. A bit like me standing here telling you all about it in the first part of the presentation. Lists of publications, getting people working with geoportals, etc. But the key thing really is the linking and this kind of matching platforms, as they call them. But for the SMEs that sit here in this sort of service provider directory, so your experience of your company, your capabilities, your regions of interest, etc., would sit there as the properties of the SME. The regional contacts office is from Dorisnet. And the other component which I mentioned, which might be more of an interest, is sort of virtual GMS Academy here, which is going to be set up to allow to have summer schools and online kind of sessions where people can learn more about GMS from an academic point of view, and therefore do more of the development R&D work as GMS expands. And so this is all going to live on the web in this GMS Regions portal. It looks a bit like this. But as you can see, this is a prototype of GMS offers something for someone and something for someone else. But the key things here are that there's going to be an entry point for entrepreneurs and SMEs. So if you've got something to offer, if you've got a process, an application, a downstream service, that can be added in there. Research people come in here, find out about what's happening and offer their research services. Explore GMS in terms of finding out what types of products are already out there. You can imagine a situation where a particular regional authority and a particular SME may have developed an application and may be running very well, but then a demonstrator or a kind of white paper could be there, or some kind of document to show people, give an example of what's happening. And of course the end users come into that big portal there, etc. and lots of some of this research, academia banner, lots of tools here for things like facilitating stuff, are the lectures happening, where are they happening, directories of universities, research centres involved in GMES. So if you bring a course which is very aligned to what GMES is offering, then that course can kind of go into there, and that you guys could use that as a way of linking up to prospective students or maybe collaborators. Maybe there's an end user that wants to do something in a very R&D field that prefer to work with the university. So don't worry, I've nearly finished. Just on the summary slide now. Excuse me. So I think now is a kind of, there's lots of real opportunities now for Earth observation applications in this sector, purely because there's going to be so much data coming through from the Sentinels when they get launched. And you'll also have these partially processed products, these high resolution layers to help in your development. It kind of means that you can get closer to the user end of the process without having to do quite so much hard work. If what you want is something like crown cover density, why not start with a high resolution layer and then supplement that? And I think this core downstream model is kind of starting to move more towards my idea of the kind of the top-down, bottom-up combination. I think that's a kind of really useful way of developing EO implementations. I think it's another good example there. And I think GMES, you may not know much about it now, but it's likely to become a big part of EO operations in the future, especially in Europe. And there's a global component, but I don't kind of really deal with it, but if you're using global stuff, then follow up some of the GMES global things, that would be very useful. So now I think now is a good time for SMEs to show an interest in GMES. I would suggest the first step is to kind of look at the client base that you're currently dealing with and just think what bits of that activity could then be supported by GMES. So it makes life easier for you, kind of incorporates more sustainability into anything you're offering. I would say to people, get involved in this GRAAL type activity, this GMES for Regions, if you're interested. It's not live yet, it's almost there. We were editing some of the text for the sort of dynamic pages last week, so it's almost there, it should go live in the next few weeks. I think the key thing is it then allows people to develop these downstream applications, this tight user service provider link. So rather than some kind of big project at the European level trying to offer something down to a local authority in a particular area and being unsuccessful because they're trying to be too general for instance, you can then have a very focused application development. And in lots of ways that is a lot more straightforward than getting involved with these big framework programs, which quite frankly the administration is a nightmare and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. So I think the closer we get to that kind of downstream application development, the much easier it's going to be. And I think in the long run, as a kind of sum up, then the value of GMES is eventually going to be, it's not been measured by these big programs, it's not been measured by how many bits of space hardware have been fired up into space. It's going to be how much of an impact it's had on all these different user levels. So how much impact does it have on the local regional authorities? How much impact does it have on the member states? How much impact at the European level? And I think the big chunk that's missing at the moment is this local regional authority, where the SMEs can help. Okay, so I just want to thank actually all the people from the GLAND 2 project I'm working with, particularly Panatech Italia, who actually developed a lot of the GMES, the high resolution layer slides, etc., and a number of other partners from GLAND 2. And then the GRAAL team, particularly led by the leaders of the project, Space Tech Partners, who are driving that kind of website development, etc. So that's great thanks to those guys there. One final thing, that's me at the top, so if anyone wants to get hold of me, probably heard enough from me for a little while now. There's some useful websites to look at. LandEU is a kind of portal to look at some of the GMES products. Now, GMES for Regions, as I said, well, it's about to open up, so that's we'll see. GMES Info is a kind of background site that anyone who wants to know more about GMES can go to find out all the different projects over all those domains, so the marine, atmosphere, etc., they're all covered there. And then finally, GMES GLAND Info is the kind of more general site for the GLAND project. This is kind of more of an offer, really. I don't know how many people here would be interested, but I'm supposed to be doing some training on these land products. So that's more of a kind of day-long kind of activity where it's more of a detailed description of the actual products themselves, some demonstrations of how you would use the products, and then some hands-on stuff. So if anyone was interested, I mean, I'm quite happy to come back up to Edinburgh. I mean, you could widen it out beyond the university or maybe include some of the government departments here if people are interested. And then we could do a whole day kind of thing where we could sort of demonstrate the stuff, and then guys have got a lab with some PCs, we get some data on, people could actually then start using it. So we could do some demos and try and tailor them for a Scottish situation. Give some examples. So I'll leave that one open to everyone. If anyone's interested, just get in touch with me and we can try and organise that. I mean, I have contacts with SNH, etc., so people there, we could maybe pull that together. Maybe this is SMEs in Edinburgh or Glasgow, Edinburgh area that are interested. You might want to do that. So the only thing you need to do is find a room. I mean, I'd be free because I'll get paid to do it. But you guys just need to find a room where we can sort that out. So that's the end. Thanks very much. And, I hope it's made some kind of sense.
Great. Sounds great. You're always looking for jobs, so there you go, to carve your own out. But possible opportunities. Questions, meantime?
They'll be freely available to like government agencies. Okay. So if you were a subcontractor for a government agency, then you'd then have to. I've not seen an actual license document. People always stand up and say free and open access. Mm-hmm. But whether that's free and open access on a web server to everybody, or whether it's free and open access with a password.
Yeah, totally for commercial purposes.
Yeah. But the thing is, yeah, that's right, because GMES is sort of funded through the GG Enterprise, so they would hopefully want to be developing business on the back of this. I'm not sure. In theory, yeah, what I don't want to say is yes or no, really. I've not seen it actually written out in legalese, but in theory, yes. And the other thing is that, you know, moving into an age now of web services and software as a service type stuff, that you would hope you wouldn't even have to need to own any of this stuff. It would all sit out there in the cloud or something, and you know, you'd build an application or a model that you would then use, and it would drag all this stuff in. So all this kind of, you know, sending CDs around, I hope that's not going to happen. But I think the good thing is that it would be a great demonstrator for that if this stuff is hosted out there. And, you know, the same across Europe, different SMEs, different local authorities, they're using the same data set. And you know there's consistency then. So if someone in Italy produces an indicator and someone in Scotland produces an indicator, it's got the same data behind it and a traceable algorithm, then get us sort of develop a level of consistency that I don't think we've had before.
Okay,
commission, I think. I can find out. I mean, at the moment, it's just something I don't have on the tip of my tongue, so I don't want to say something. And then in years to come, people come back and say, well, that Jeff Smith bloke said that it should be. But I mean, in the Graal stuff, I mean, that'll be the types of information that will be available on, through the website, the documentation you would need. So if you wanted to tell you about that kind of question, rather than thinking, oh my God, where do we go to? I think I'll go to the Graal website, GMS for Regions, and all that kind of stuff will be there. So has anyone in the room used working with GMS type development projects? Has anyone, interestingly, who heard of GMS before today? Okay, maybe Bert.
Would you suggest that perhaps the others maybe have a look at some of the websites?
Yeah, definitely.
Come back to you.
Definitely. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm quite happy to answer questions on this. And if, you know, I don't know, you got the people doing it on courses here, have you gone past your setting up your projects type phase yet?
Dissertation-wise.
Dissertation,
in the process, haven't we? Yeah, some potential.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone was interested in doing something based on GMS data, I would certainly advise them on what was available now. I mean, I said those imperviousness layers are available for the whole of Europe at the moment, so that's for those 2 years, so someone wants to change work on that. That's available. I think the interesting thing with them is when you combine them with something else, so... I don't think I've got an example in this presentation, but it's when you've got a land cover map already, say a forest polygon or something, and you add the forest information behind it. I mean, the simplest way to do it is make it slightly transparent, and you can see it behind. But it kind of shows how much detail that is often lost in the production of a map, especially something like Karim, which has got a 25 hectare minimum mapping unit. So you imagine you can start doing different very large polygons. In the UK, there's an arable polygon that runs from Northumbria down to the south coast, basically, and with holes in it for the towns and the lakes, large lakes, and Thetford Forest and stuff like that. So, you can start off with a base product and then quickly add information to it with these high-resolution layers. So, that's an interesting development area that I'd be interested to hear if anyone's going to do that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
well,
I've
watched
it. So,
what's
the resolution?
They're 20 metres.
All of it.
Yeah. It's all standard, 20 metres. So, on that list of satellite sources, they're using AWIFS data for some of the products, which is 60 metres, but they're oversampling it down to 20 metres as an end product. And it will be 2012. So
okay.
It's been updated once, yeah. But there's another update about it.
And will the other layers, are there plans to update those every 3 years?
Yeah, I think they're going to try and go on a 3-year cycle. So I think you imagine something like the Korean updates would be every 6 years, maybe. And then between them, you'd have an update of the layers. So if you can set up a system where you're integrating those layers into Korean, you've got a... I mean, because the thing is, they can then flag changes, so... Yeah, by the time when you come around to do your next Kareem map, you may already have an idea of where to send your digitizers or your field surveyors where to go out. So even if the exact value might not be correct, because there's going to be quality issues as these produced at a European scale, but the exact value might not be correct, but the fact that it's an indicator of something happening, and then just targets your other work. You purchase a VHR image to sit over an area of change.
From a business perspective, how difficult is it to sort of get your foot on the ladder? You said there, with the European projects, you need to get a certain amount of external funding from other sources before Dell let you on board.
Yeah. That's part of the kind of co-funding agreement. In terms of getting involved, it is a kind of who you know, not what you know. Because what a consortium get built up through, probably the same as, same in research consortium, they get built up that way. But what tends to happen is the bigger players, like the kind of Astriums of this world, they've got people lobbying in Brussels anyway, so they get a heads up when things are going to happen before they're going to happen. So they can get it, whereas an SME, you can because there's no way a small SME could actually kind of lead any of these bids. I mean, I think when the GLN 1 bid went in, I think, well, Infoterra Germany as it was, Astrium now, I think they probably had a bid team of about 12 people working on it. So it was not like, you know, if you're a two-man, three-man SME somewhere, there's no way you can actually lead those sort of things. And they take a lot of management through there. So that's why I think it's now, as we get to this more kind of downstream end, is where, you know, you may have one or two SMEs working together with an end user in a very tight situation, tight controlled situation, rather than then having to go through all this large-scale administration for an EU project.
I kind of
the thinking end of stuff. I try and stay away from production, so it's kind of feasibility study type work. Or when people, for instance, some of those in the GLN project at the moment, I'm looking at testing some integration between various products and the high resolution layers. So what I would do is just demonstrate that, and then a more production orientated company or would take that on and roll it out into something more operational. So it's that kind of prototype and feasibility study. So lots of sort of consultancy. Where people want advice on remote sensing, I try and prevent people from misusing remote sensing. I mean, I've got a client who's they've got a very small area that he wants to map. And someone came along with a UAV and said, yeah, we'll do this for you. And then, I don't know, 6 months later, they get a DVD to do with 1,000 JPEGs on. But no GPS control or no inertial navigation. So this guy's sitting there with his ArcGIS trying to rubber sheet these 1,000 images together. And, you know, it's that sort of person that I tend to kind of help out, you know, a lot. Again, it's kind of being very tight with your, you know, very close to your end user and then your client. So, you know, if they'd have come to me first, you know, it's not that I would have stopped him having the UAV flown, but I said, well, you need this and this and this. And then he could have gone to the guy who kind of got a much better deal out of that. So he's now got a DVD, so he's going to have to toss through it, I think, just buy some proper data. But there's a lot of that kind of goes on, so I think it's there's a role for SMEs to provide. That's the sort of skill side of things, where the skill and experience you provide, which is a value. It's not like having a capacity in terms of how many computers you've got or how many terabytes of storage. You can really add value by just providing an experience.
I think that might be a nice place to let you off the hook.
Great, thank you.
Well, before I say thanks again, TV at Library Bar, I presume. I think we'll retire and you'll be hanging around.
Yes.
So we will we'll to speak offline, as it were. Yeah. So do stay around and obviously check out the things. We definitely have a room. We even have a nice room with computers in it, hopefully we can secure, so that perhaps we can look into that.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's a very great offer. Right, that's about it. There should be a talk, the next talk, the 23rd, geographically weighted regression, which will come in handy for our GIS students, if they haven't had enough of that already. So we look forward to that. So that's it. I just say thanks once again to Jeff.